Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankosh, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're going to be joined after the first commercial break this morning by Anissa Abd El Fata. If I have not pronounced her name correctly, we'll get that corrected when she comes on. But she is the founder and chairwoman of the National Association of Muslim American Women, NAMAW. We're going to be discussing this morning a statement on free speech in this country that the National Association of Muslim American Women has come forth with. We're also going to be talking about a complaint that they have registered with the Justice Department of the United States in regard to the actions of the Israeli lobby in this country. That's a very interesting statement, by the way. I will later get that posted, along with many other news items of Breaking All the Rules News, get the full text of it posted so that people can actually read word for word, line by line, paragraph by paragraph what's in it. But it is a fascinating statement and is one that will stimulate a lot of conversation today, and I assume some calling later at later points in the show in regard to some of your own comments. Tomorrow I'm going to have a very special guest on the show, Dr. Richard Cummings. He's been a friend of mine for years. If you're not familiar with him, you need to be. He is a very fine person, a very fun person. He has an academic and professional resume that is absolutely out of this world. He was involved for years with the American intelligence community in the Middle East. He is the Middle Eastern a correspondent and also a consultant for Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative. If you're familiar with that publication, you likely have seen Richard Cummings in print at one time or another. If you go to lourockwell.com, there is a very extensive Richard Cummings archive there that will enable you to see some of his writings and his biography. He is a graduate both of Princeton and of Cambridge. He has a legal education. He is a member of the Association of Retired Intelligence Officers. And in addition to his background as a Middle Eastern consultant for Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative, he is just a delightful guy. He's a playwright. He's been involved in all kinds of things related to humanitarian causes. He's just a different sort of fellow. When you start talking about a guy who's a playwright and who is a legal expert, he's a Middle Eastern consultant for Pat Buchanan's publication, and again is widely known in libertarian circles, not simply for things that he's written in the area of foreign policy, but for a lot of the things that he has talked about in terms of domestic policy and the frightening growth of government and the unconstitutional direction that both our domestic and foreign policy are headed in. If you've never been exposed to this guy before, I guarantee you, you will really enjoy him, and he's a very fine human being to boot. He has written an article that deals with Lockheed Martin and their role in American-Iraq policy. You can find that article posted at Breaking All the Rules News. I'm sure that Dr. Cummings' article is making the rounds throughout the Internet even as I speak. But if you go to Breaking All the Rules News at BATR.net/BATR News, you will find, as you scroll down the page at some point, that article related to Lockheed Martin and their influence in American policy in Iraq, well worth your time. As far as the other news items of the day are concerned, there's really not all that much that I see that is new to report in regard to the president's speech and what he had to say a couple of nights ago. We probably will discuss that as well with our guest after this commercial break. This is Mark Dankosh, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We will be back with Anissa Abd El Fata, the founder and chairwoman of the National Association of Muslim American Women. Stay tuned.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Attention, friends of freedom and liberty. Our constitutional republic is under a vicious attack by the sinister forces of world globalization. The hour is late, and we must all actively engage our families, friends, and neighbors before it's too late. Now you can exercise your constitutional right of free speech with a statement t-shirt from the Republic Broadcasting Network and NoTyranny.com. Wearing a statement t-shirt causes people to think, challenge, and debate what they've been spoon-fed by the controlled corporate media. There's no time to sit around in fear asking yourself, what can I do? Now is the time to make a strong public statement with one of the many t-shirts from Republic Broadcasting Network and NoTyranny.com. Go to RBNLive.com's Freedom Store, NoTyranny.com. Or call 800-724-2719. It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Anissa Abd El Fattah, or El Fattah. I'm going to ask her shortly how she pronounces that. Bring my American English slash Arabic up to speed on how to correctly pronounce that. She is the founder and chairwoman of the National Association of Muslim American Women. That she's held that position from 1989 to the present. She's the former executive director of the Center for Public Policy Research in Washington, D.C., was involved in that from 1996 to 1997. She was the editor of the Middle East Affairs Journal from 1995 to 2002. She's a former director of media relations and public affairs for UASR, and had a short stint in the United States Army in the late 1970s, studied history, economics, and law. Anissa, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Mark?
Can you pronounce your name for me and for our listeners so that you're reliably assured that your host can say it correctly? Go ahead.
Anissa Abd El Fattah.
Anissa Abd El Fattah.
Yes.
Very good. It has a beautiful ring to it, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
And you have your organization has issued a most fascinating statement on free speech in this country that I was taking a look at last night. It's a very extensive statement, and I will make sure that in some of the news agencies that I post for, that this gets out there so people can read it for themselves. But it goes on to emphasize both the First Amendment and the Bill of Rights, as those are understood in terms of a Jeffersonian republic. And when it goes on to say that, quote, we do not believe that slander, libel, defamation, perjury, seditious speech, or speech that is intended to undermine the equal rights and equal protection of the, under the law of any U.S. citizen is protected by the First Amendment. And then it makes reference to a complaint that has apparently been filed by the National Association of Muslim American Women to the Department of Justice, calling for an investigation of the Jewish lobby, and that this complaint is not an attempt to chill or to remove the right to free speech of Jewish Americans or anyone else, but it is an attempt, quoting from the text here of your document, it is an attempt to end a historic campaign by certain organizations and people of misinformation and hate-mongering against Muslims, Arabs, and other Americans who are targeted by these groups and slandered and defamed as anti-Semites, quote-unquote, or worse, terrorists, quote-unquote, or potential terrorists, quote-unquote, if they utilize their rights to free speech to criticize Israel, question aspects of the Holocaust, or to give an opinion about the U.S.-Israel relationship that is not favorable to Israel, or that is in support of Palestinian rights, or that calls into question the behavior or speech of any Jewish personality or person. How did this statement come about, and what are some of the experiences and observations that you have that have finally resulted in this putting to paper portions of the statement that I just read?
Okay, well, let me go back. Some time ago, when I was the Director of Media Relations and Public Affairs for UASR, which was a pro-Palestinian think tank that had been established in the Washington, D.C. area by several Palestinian Americans, we had Daniel Pipes, and I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Daniel.
I know who he is, but go ahead.
Okay. He is a writer and editor of a noted Middle East journal. He is Jewish, and I think by most opinions he is a Zionist. He had been a guest of ours. We used to do roundtable discussions where we would bring personalities to meet with people of different opinions and things. They would give a brief presentation. We would have question and answer, and that's kind of how it went. The purpose was to bring people together from who had disparate opinions in order for them to kind of get to know exactly what one another the opinions were on things out without being dependent on media representations of what people believe or what they are, have to say. So we had Daniel Pipes, and this was at the same time that he had coined this phrase, Islamist and Islam. Of course, Islamist and Islamism, I'm sorry, and this was prior to the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. So he was our guest there, and people in the audience were questioning him on his coining of this term Islamist. And we were asking him, what exactly is an Islamist? Because in Islam, the religion, we don't have this term. We don't have any entity called an Islamist. And we also questioned his authority as someone who was not Muslim, who has nothing to do with Islam and obviously knows very little about it, his right to coin such a term. At any rate, he insisted that his definition of an Islamist was a radical, militant Muslim who was terroristic in their view. He also insisted that what he was talking about was a very small number of people that he had identified, not necessarily in the United States, but that his concern is that they were influencing the Muslim community in the United States. Now, on December 26th of last year, Pipes had an article published in the New York Post. I forget the exact title of it, but it was something like, having defeated communism and fascism, can the West defeat the Islamist? And he defined in the article Islamist as any Muslim who demands to live according to Islamic law. Now, for people who don't know very much about Islam, that might not be very alarming. But in the Quran, this is exactly how Muslim is defined. It says, you are a Muslim because you have submitted to this body of law, which is the Islamic law. So at that point, after reading the article, I contacted some of the other women in the organization, and I let them know what my concerns were. And then we went from there to try to decide how would we address this. And we decided that it wasn't enough just to attempt to address what Pipes had said in this particular article, that the only way we were going to address generally this freedom that the Jewish lobby and its constituents have taken in this respect is to call all of them to account. And so that's the purpose of our complaint.
That's a very interesting thing. I have never met Daniel Pipes. I had an email exchange with him a few years ago. I was living in Philadelphia and going to Westminster Theological Seminary, and of course I became aware of Pipes because his organization is based in the greater Philadelphia area, as I recall.
Right.
And one of the things that came up about him is not simply his particular take on the Islamic religion, but quite clearly, I don't think it's a distortion of the truth to say that Mr. Pipes has very close links to the government of Israel and also to the Israeli intelligence community.
Okay.
And then it emerged, and I don't remember the exact time frame on this, but human events, which for years and years, from 1944 onward, has been described as the so-called National Conservative Weekly in the United States. It at one time, in my view, had a far greater commitment to the positions of the old American right than what it represents now.
Right.
And one of the things that had emerged in recent years is that Daniel Pipes had been taken on by Human Events as some sort of a contributor to the publication at that time. And it became abundantly clear that Pipes' particular perspective, at least in my judgment, was like piping, in my view, piping statements from the Israeli Public Affairs Division in Tel Aviv
right.
directly into the pages of Human Events.
Right.
And it was a very disturbing development to me because in conjunction with the New York Post that you cite, and a number of other American neoconservative publications, it seemed that this Pipes entrance into the pages of Human Events on a regular basis was a way of getting the Israeli lobby's particular slant on events before what was probably the premier American conservative weekly in the country, at least since the end of the Second World War. And so for the readers who are not familiar, or the listeners who are not familiar with Human Events, it was once described by Luke Cannon of the Washington Post as Ronald Reagan's favorite newspaper. It had a lot to do with creating the constituency for Reagan that later led to his election as the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a super influential newspaper in the circles of the American right. And Michael Collins Piper's recent work, The Judas Goats, goes a long way toward describing how Human Events became infiltrated over the years and how it began to represent more and more a take on the American political scene that was not a part of its old right roots at all.
Right.
And this Daniel Pipes' entrance as a as an occasional contributor to Human Events and as some sort of a of an ad hoc advisor to the publication on Middle Eastern affairs seemed to me to be a transparent example of the way in which the Israeli lobby in the United States seeks to have its tentacles everywhere,
right.
Left, right, and center, to ensure that basically only a particular perspective is getting before the mainstream political audiences in this country. And when you mention Pipes, again, it seems to me as I read some of his literature that what you have is a situation where his very definition of what you describe as an Islamist, or what he describes as an Islamist, could basically lead to the criminalization of any form of expression of the Muslim religion in the United States.
Exactly.
We will be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Back with Anissa Abd El Fattah when we return.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Gold, ever climbing, as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898. Attention, friends of freedom and liberty. Our constitutional republic is under a vicious attack by the sinister forces of world globalization. The hour is late, and we must all actively engage our families, friends, and neighbors before it's too late. Now you can exercise your constitutional right of free speech with a statement t-shirt from the Republic Broadcasting Network and NoTyranny.com. Wearing a statement t-shirt causes people to think, challenge, and debate what they've been spoon-fed by the controlled corporate media. There's no time to sit around in fear asking yourself, what can I do? Now is the time to make a strong public statement with one of the many t-shirts from Republic Broadcasting Network and NoTyranny.com. Go to RBNLive.com's Freedom Store, NoTyranny.com. Or call 800-724-2719.
Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Anissa Abd El Fattah, the founder and chairwoman of the National Association of Muslim American Women. And Anissa, before the break, we were talking a little bit about Daniel Pipes. You know, I have noticed, I have had a number of experiences in recent years as a card-carrying member of the old American right, mm-hmm. of things that have been directed at me that we won't go into on the air. I know Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross, and I have talked a little bit about this. I know some of the things that he's experienced. I've never talked to Michael Collins Piper about this personally, but I suspect he would probably be nodding if he's listening to this in regard to various things that he has experienced as probably the premier journalist that I'm aware of in terms of exposing the kinds of things going on with the Jewish lobby in the United States. Mm-hmm. The point is that as I examine this issue, it seems to me that we are talking about something that's not simply being directed at the Muslim American community, but that we're talking about something that has, by extension, been applied to a series of non-Muslim Americans who from time to time have taken the trouble to look at some of these issues and simply to say, hey, look, the Israeli lobby's got too much power in this country. They are basically a foreign lobby that has a disproportionate influence in the American media, the American educational institutions, and that has a disproportionate influence in American presidential elections and obviously in congressional elections as well. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, it seems to me that this is a burgeoning issue, not simply in terms of the Muslim American community, but a much wider group of Americans who either are aware or should be aware of the amount of power that these folks have.
Well, let me say this, Mark. Actually, this phenomenon began before was happening to regular Americans, particularly American politicians, before they targeted the Muslim and Arab communities in the United States. And when they would direct these attempts to deny other Americans' right to free speech and to slander and defame other Americans was actually when they would attack mostly politicians, but also anyone who had access to the public that could make a statement, they would call them anti-Semites. To be, defined as an anti-Semite in the United States, anti-Semitism is, European anti-Semitism was blamed for the Holocaust. So to be called an anti-Semite meant that you were a person who hated Jews beyond what would be considered a resentment or a political disagreement or a dislike. What it equated you to was the people who had actually carried out the Holocaust. So this is a level of hatred and defining a person to be a type of person that is less than human, probably by most estimations, considering what we've been generally, taught about the Holocaust. So for us, this is a type of slander and a type of defamation, something that in the law is called fighting words, where people are damaged by it, where they suffer actual literal damages. I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with the case with Congressman Paul Finley and what he went through after being labeled an anti-Semite. So before they were calling Muslims terrorists and potential terrorists, they were calling other Americans who would speak out about the injustices taking place against the Palestinian people, about the disproportionate influence that the Jewish lobby was having in the United States, the type of things that its network of supporters, vandalism, harassment, threats against other Americans because they want to utilize their rights to free speech and political participation. These things were happening to non-Muslims long before they were happening to Muslims. But unfortunately, I don't really have any explanation for this, that no one ever was willing to challenge them on the right that even though, or challenge them from the position that even though they have rights to free speech, they don't have rights to libel and defamation and to slander people. And to call a person an anti-Semite simply because you disagree with their political opinion, in our opinion, this rises to the level of defamation. And more than that, it is a defamation that has a clear intent to chill everyone else's right to free speech. Because I think, as you suspect, and as I believe I know, the purpose of all of this type of defamation and slander is to silence the voices of Americans who disagree with or who take an opposing position to the political agenda of the Jewish lobby and Israel. So we believe that they are using language and their influence over our Congress and our government to deny other Americans our full rights to free speech, whether they do that by calling us anti-Semites when we disagree with them, or whether they do it to Muslims and Arabs by saying that anyone who is pro-Palestinian is a supporter of terrorism or a potential terrorist or a terrorist sympathizer, that all of this is an attempt to deny other Americans their right to free speech.
We'll be back. I wanted to bring into the conversation something that I witnessed in 1996 regarding the presidential campaign of Pat Buchanan, and how that may shed some light on what we're talking about with Anissa this morning. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you from San Antonio, Texas, and the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Do you suffer from frequent and severe headaches? Well, you don't have to any longer. Headache Stay Gone is an all-natural headache remedy that is free of all side effects. Headache Stay Gone will cure any headache and prevent it from returning again. Painkillers can offer temporary relief at best, along with a long list of harmful side effects. Headache Stay Gone uses all-natural ingredients and cures your headache, letting you enjoy more time with your family and loved ones. We'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone today and send you the bill. Wait until your headache is cured before you pay for it. That's right, Headache Stay Gone must work for you before you pay for it. Try Headache Stay Gone risk-free by calling 1-800-327-0727 or visit www.headachestaygone.com. Again, that's 1-800-327-0727. And don't forget to ask about your risk-free trial today. Call now. Start living life without the headaches.
Take the heat out of your sleep. The Bedfan Personal Cooling System will work for anyone that is a hot sleeper, regardless of the reason. It gives you a deep, restful sleep, the way nature intended. No more tossing and turning. Say goodbye to sleepless nights. So ask yourself, are you a hot sleeper and really want to sleep cooler? A woman who suffers from the effects of menopause, including night sweats derived from hot flashes, have a medical condition that causes your body to get hot at night, or just want to save money on your air conditioning bill. It works instantly. No tools or assembly required. Don't worry. The Bedfan fits short beds, tall beds, beds with footboards, sleigh beds, water beds, and many other types of beds. If you want great relief and total comfort, give us a call at 1-210-632-8280. That's 1-210-632-8280. Or visit our site at bedfan.com. Your provider for great sleep.
Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Anissa Abdel-Fattah, the founder and chairwoman of the National Association of Muslim American Women. Anissa, we were talking about this whole situation where non-Muslims and Muslims alike have been demonized by the Israeli lobby historically in this country and elsewhere. I wanted to share with you something that I experienced as, I guess, what you would call a Robert Taft Republican. You know, I had I am a newcomer to some, a relative newcomer to some of the issues that you're talking about, in that for a period of many years, like most Americans, I was pretty much of the opinion that Israel was in the right in this Middle Eastern situation, and that the bad guys were on the other side. And that was a presupposition, of course, that continued through many years of my involvement in mainstream conservative Republican activism from the time that I was in college on forward. But over a period of many years dating back to the late 1980s, I began to experience some things that we don't necessarily have to talk about on the air that go back to when I was a radio broadcaster in a 50,000-watt Christian radio station in Seattle, and when I was also a chairman, a state legislative district chairman in the Republican Party in King County, Seattle, that began to have me wonder just what all was going on with this. And of course that coalesced into my own involvement as a volunteer with the Pat Buchanan presidential campaigns in 1992 and 1996 down here in Texas. And in 1996, for those who don't remember this, Pat Buchanan won the New Hampshire primary in the Republican Party, and from that time on forward, there was an obvious orchestrated attempt to destroy the legitimacy of his candidacy in the early Republican primaries and caucuses after he had some initial successes in a couple of different places, including Louisiana and Alaska, and then, of course, his victory in New Hampshire. There then emerged with Time and with Newsweek and with U.S. News and World Report front page cover stories on Buchanan that were obviously attempts to demonize him. And not only in the way that he was depicted pictorially in the front of these magazines, but the whole tenor of the coverage of Buchanan from that time on forward began to underscore the theme, either directly or indirectly, that he was a racist and an anti-Semite. And it became apparent when William F. Buckley's National Review started examining the question of whether or not Pat Buchanan was an anti-Semite, and Bill Kristol's Weekly Standard started picking up on this, the New Republic chimed in, that all of a sudden you had a situation where people like me, who had backed Buchanan for our own reasons, were looking at that and saying, hey, that's me that they're talking about.
Exactly.
In other words, because I have some concerns about the direction of American culture, happen to be pro-life, happen to think that that our public school system has gotten incredibly decadent, because I am concerned about the way in which our support of Israel has led to not only a one-sided approach to American foreign policy from a moral perspective when it comes to the Palestinians, but from a Jeffersonian point of view, from the vantage point of George Washington's farewell address on foreign policy, any of us who are non-Muslims, including me, who are saying these guys, meaning the Israeli lobby, they've got too much power, they've got too much influence, they are creating a situation that is exposing the United States worldwide to retributions and to hatred and to complications that we would not be enduring had we listened to George Washington in the first place. And for merely saying that, merely being concerned about the disproportionate influence of a foreign government, a foreign ideology into the domestic American political scene, we were all, who had any sort of a connection to Buchanan's campaign, directly or indirectly, tarred, it seems to me, with this brush of being racists and anti-Semites and haters, and, of course, potentially by implication. The implication was there that somehow we might be dangerous people who are prone to violence and all of this other stuff.
Exactly, and that is the reason, you know, listeners and others might not understand that this term anti-Semite is not like calling someone stupid or dumb or saying I disagree with you or you're ugly or you need to comb your hair or you're an idiot. It's not even like saying you're evil and you're bad. What it's saying is that you are a sympathizer with those people who took Jewish people and put them in ovens and killed them. It is a moniker that has severe ramifications for people politically. I know people who have been targeted and tagged as anti-Semites who can't find work. I mean, it carries with it a very heavy burden. And there ought to also be equal responsibility for using that term. But what they have done is they have carved out this space for them in our Constitution and our society that allows them to use any kind of hurtful and defaming and slanderous speech in order to obliterate any political opposition. Even worse than obliterating political opposition is to deny and deprive other Americans civil rights. Now, you're talking about Pat Buchanan's campaign. Let's see all of the ways that by targeting or tagging Pat Buchanan as an anti-Semite, that it hurts anyone who sympathized with Pat or supported him in his bid for the presidency. What do you become then? Well, they attack your right to political association. They're attacking your right to political expression. They're attacking your right to formulate a political opinion that is unique and to have the right to speak that opinion. And most of all, what they're doing is they are threatening and intimidating, which means they don't have to come, they don't have to pass a law that says non-Jews don't have constitutional rights anymore. They just make the price to utilize your rights so high that you surrender your rights on your own.
Exactly. And, you know, obviously those of us who are not racists and who are not prone to criminal behavior and who merely understand these issues in terms of Washington's foreign policy and a basic Jeffersonian commitment to free speech can see where this thing is headed. And, right. You know, you cited Paul Findlay earlier. Mm-hmm. He was a Democrat from Illinois, was he not?
That's right.
Yes. I found Paul Findlay's test case to be particularly interesting because as one goes back into his career and what happened to him, I, of course, was not aware of a lot of this stuff until I started reading publications, generally mainstream, but very fine publications, like the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs that began to speak about what had happened to Findlay. Mm-hmm. But here you had a Democratic congressman. It was very striking to me that he had been subjected to the same kind of thing as Pat Buchanan on the right, mm-hmm. and that you had a situation where ultimately it destroyed his career in Congress.
Yeah.
And when one examines this sort of thing again, it is striking to me that we're seeing evidence of this all over again as it comes down to some of the things that begin to be levied against anyone who, again, voices even mild opposition to what the agenda of the Israeli lobby is. I mean, consider, for example, the irony in the fact that Jimmy Carter,
That's right.
whatever one thinks of Jimmy Carter, and I have some pretty divergent points of view from the ex-president on a variety of issues,
mm-hmm.
it struck me as inherently absurd.
Yeah.
Absurd that anyone would believe that Jimmy Carter is a racist and an anti-Semite, mm-hmm. And yet, of course, this has been the party line that is being bandied about in much of the mainstream American press,
right.
that reports on these allegations as they are directed against the former president.
Right. Well, let's ask ourselves, why is he being called an anti-Semite? Because Israel has built a wall, and in the building of this wall to separate itself from Palestine, it has defined a border. They have confiscated land that was not part of their UN-mandated border. Even Jewish peace activists call this apartheid. Even the Jewish community in South Africa issued a statement and said it's apartheid. None of these people have been called anti-Semites. Now, that's like if I make an observation and say what day it is, and I'm right, if someone from the Jewish lobby doesn't like it, I can be called an anti-Semite. Maybe I can be called an anti-Semite because they disagree with me on what day it is. That sounds absolutely absurd. But when you look at particularly what's happening to Jimmy Carter, who is simply calling it as he sees it, there's no one who can look at that situation and say that is not apartheid. It is the classic definition and example of what apartheid is. So then how does his calling that apartheid make him an anti-Semite, particularly when The people who are running the Israeli government and the majority of so-called Jews who are occupying Palestine are not Semites. The Palestinians are the Semites. So this whole conversation has become so skewed and so politicized and so just burdened with dishonesty that it has made it almost impossible for people in the United States, first of all, to understand the truth of this whole situation that they've embroiled us in, this whole Middle East fiasco that they've embroiled the United States in. We can hardly understand that as citizens. The amount of money that we pour into these conflicts, and we can't understand why we can never have peace, why no matter who proposes a peace project, nothing ever gains any traction, why we can't have negotiations, why nobody is qualified to be a peace partner, why they come here to the United States and claim that they are victims and want peace, but for some reason there can never be peace, and they're the only ones with tanks and machine guns and missiles and nuclear weapons. We can't grasp hold of these conversations as American citizens and start to understand what's going on and how our money is being utilized, because they have taken this barbed wire, which is actually pointed and hateful speech, and surrounded these issues to the point that we can't touch them for fear of being called anti-Semites. And we see this exactly. You're raising this issue of Jimmy Carter, and his new book is the perfect example of that.
Yes, and, just since the American off-year elections in the first Tuesday in November, from the vantage point of Orwellian doublespeak, it is absolutely terrifying to me to see the number of American politicians in both of the major parties who are ensuring that they are on the quote-unquote right side of the law when it comes to this whole question of Israel.
Yeah.
We see it with Hillary Clinton. We see it with Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer in the Democratic Party. There was an article today in Dr. Michael Chasadosky's Global Research. He was on my show yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And this article by Michael Carmichael is entitled Edwards Veers Hard Right. Now, John Edwards, my buddy Kurt Nimmo has suggested that John Edwards is quite likely to be the next nominee of the Democratic Party for the presidency of the United States. And given his demographics, which are quite similar to those of Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, Kurt may well prove to be right. But it's interesting that when it comes to John Edwards, Michael Carmichael's article at globalresearch.ca talks about, in a so-called shocking development, John Edwards cast aside his progressive veneer and veered to the hard right to support the escalation of Bush's wars in the Middle East to engulf Iran. During a lamentable speech he made in Tel Aviv, Edwards sanctioned a U.S. war against Iran, denied the recommendations of the Iraq Study Group, and bashed the Palestinian people. Are we to make, as we look at what Michael Carmichael is saying in Global Research today on John Edwards, are we to see this as a microcosm of the much larger problem that emerges in regard to the neoconservative agenda of the Israeli lobby?
Well, absolutely. What it means essentially is that politicians in the United States have figured out who the kingmakers are. So anyone who wants to be a king has to bow down. And the way that you bow down is that you make a trip, you know, and you give your oath of fealty, and then you come back to the United States and you start fleecing the American people and lining our children up to go off and die in needless and senseless wars in order to position Israel geopolitically in the Middle East. And that's the bottom line, what all of this basically is all about. It is a way to silence people who would tell the truth, who would expose the types of things that are going on, and to keep them silent. So there really is only one voice. You know, it's interesting how this technique has been used so successfully in the United States, but it's so hard for the American people to grasp and understand really what's going on. It's like they have us all on tilt. Here are all the politicians that we have been taught that we should respect and trust, who are so much a part of this whole disarming apparatus, that you don't know who do you listen to, who do you believe. Well, it's interesting because it sends us back to a very natural kind of listening that is more intuitive, that says, well, just listen to what they say and then watch what they do, and then the truth becomes kind of obvious. You no longer become the kind of person that you need someone to come and tell you what the truth is. With this whole weapons of mass destruction, you see how that argument built up, and you see who the people were who brought us that argument. You see how the media participated in spreading that lie. We got to see firsthand how that whole apparatus, how it operates, and then we see what it led to. Now they're doing the same thing with Iran, you know.
Absolutely, and the parallel between the two situations is absolutely frightening. And again, when you consider what's going on with Hillary Clinton and with Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and John Edwards on the Democratic side of the aisle,
right.
Then you turn to the Republican side, and I cited yesterday on the show as part of what we discussed, this Jewish Daily Forward post that was put together by Jennifer Siegel on Friday, January 5th. The title of this article is McCain, John McCain, lines up New York money men raising pressure on Rudy Giuliani. Well, of course, McCain's rather bellicose statements ongoingly about this Middle Eastern situation, mm-hmm. the need for more troops, maybe the need to widen the war, mm-hmm. and all of this other stuff. When one compares those statements with what Jennifer Siegel talks about, as a reporter for the Jewish lobby in the Jewish Daily Forward, any reasonable person, mm-hmm. I think, who was to examine the evidence that she has on John McCain in this story would see that there's something going on here, something going on that General Wes Clark apparently said something about in the last couple of days,
right.
And he's now drawing the fire of the Republican Jewish Coalition.
Yeah.
We will be back with Anissa Abd El Fattah when Mark Dankoff's America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself, or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Mark Gancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, in the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Anissa Abd El-Fattah, who is the founder and chairwoman of the National Association of Muslim American Women, talking about the role of the Israeli lobby in stifling dissent in the American domestic political scene, also talking about their influence in some other things that may pertain to a widening of the war in the Middle East. I wanted to warn our guest and also the listeners that, of course, in the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to have a series of rather frequent commercial breaks, and then we will have a much longer period of time for continuous conversation again. But I just wanted to bring something else into play in this conversation that I think is a microcosm of the much larger problem as it pertains to the Israeli lobby and to American domestic political politics. The Jewish Telegraphic Agency, which is, I guess, the worldwide Israeli lobby's version of the Associated Press, had a breaking news story a day or two ago entitled "The Republic Jewish Coalition Demands Apology from General Wesley Clark." Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read a little bit of this text. It says, "The Republican Jewish Coalition called on Wesley Clark to apologize for claiming that, quote, New York money people, unquote, were trying to push the U.S. into war with Iran. Clark, a former NATO commander and likely Democratic presidential candidate in 2008, was quoted on the Huffington Post political blog as saying that his greatest worry is that the Bush administration will attack Iran. Attending swearing-in parties for the new U.S. Congress, General Clark told Arianna Huffington, quote, the Jewish community is divided, but there is so much pressure being channeled from the New York money people to the office seekers, unquote. In its ads, the Republican Jewish Coalition says the comment, quote, echoed a classic anti-Semitic stereotype about Jews and money, unquote. Last week, the Anti-Defamation League accepted an explanation from Clark, who said in a letter that he backed dialogue with Iran while not removing a military option. Quote, my position on Iran should not be misinterpreted, defined out of context, or used to create conspiracy theories about one group's influence on U.S. foreign policy, he wrote. Mm-hmm. There is no place in these critical policy debates for anti-Semitic conspiracy theories that blame the Jewish community for the war in Iraq and for action against Iran. Anissa, it seems to me that Wes Clark is a classic example here of co-optation, and that he quite clearly has skirted around the issues related to this war out of some very obvious concern for his political survivability. It seems to me that in this context, a more appropriate response might have been, you're damned right I said that, and I said that because that's exactly what's going on, and the fingerprints of Israel are all over this thing, and it has nothing to do with the interest of the American public.
Well, it's interesting. The response from Clark that you read is troubling. But even more troubling than that was the statement that was supposedly made by Abe Foxman in respect to Wes Clark.
When we come back, let's take a look at that Foxman statement. This is Mark Gancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, and the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Anissa Abd El-Fattah when we return. Stay tuned.